You are listening to a sermon by A.J. Caleb, recorded on Sunday, March 27, 2011, at the Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Thank you, Don. It is indeed a privilege and an honor to be here in your midst this morning. I see a lot of wisdom. I see a lot of experience here in this room. And indeed, I consider it an honor to be here with you. My wife has joined me today, and I'm very happy for that as well. As mentioned, I had met Andre and Hannelore in Calcutta. And it was like some events that each of us go through, there is always a life-changing time. That was one of them. During that trip, I also had an opportunity to go and visit Mother Teresa's home and just at least shake her hand. We didn't have much time, but very briefly, we chatted. And to discover that this humble servant was someone who was totally given to serving God. And that experience itself was life-changing. But also during that time in Calcutta, there was another change that caused me to think and perhaps refocus the direction of my life. I call it my Calcutta moment. I'm an early riser, to which my wife will attest, and I had woken up early that morning and gone for a walk. The birds were just stirring, as some of you who have been in the tropics know that stirring in the trees is always there before they start their cacophony of noise. And these birds were busily just about ready to start chirping. And I was walking through some of the less stellar streets of Calcutta, and the sun was starting to rise, the temperature was coming up, and I was making my way back to the hotel. I turned a corner, and I looked down a street, and there, I don't know, maybe 3, 4, 5,000 people were on their way to work. I see this sea of black hair bobbing its way as these people, lunches in hand, are on their way to work. And at that instant, that moment, my spirit was deflated, because all of a sudden I thought, okay, great, here I am at this Mennonite conference, and we're talking about great and lofty things, and this is reality coming toward me. How am I going to meet the needs of these people? All of these people? I can't. And the discouragement, if those of you that have seen the balloon deflate in your lives or in reality, you know that all of a sudden it was all gone. And I was empty. And I thought, God, what am I doing here? I felt so hopeless. And almost in that same instant, one of those magical voice moments, there was this voice at the back of my mind that says, one at a time. One at a time. And it was one of those rare moments where I learned something. It doesn't happen often, again, to which my wife will attest, but I learned something, that our task is not necessarily to meet the needs of the masses. It is not necessarily evangelism explosion, not that there's anything wrong with it, some of those programs, but our task is one at a time, our faithfulness. Mission and faith, a definition. Faith. These are mine, so please, I'm being Wikipedia today. Faith, through the continual interaction or relationship development with another, which develops or results in a deep knowledge that one person is extremely reliable and will never let you down. Faith can also be termed trust earned from deep relationship. Mission. Mission, not with the S, is the outworking of an assigned task or the implementation of a course of action leading to an envisioned goal. Mission can also be summed up perhaps as goal-oriented action. I've titled this rambling today as Mission in a Wireless World. We are surrounded with devices, gadgets, doodads, things to make our lives easier, right? I was reminded of a little true story that an engineer at our church shared with us. They are in the habit of putting a GPS in their vehicle whenever they go, and this Sunday morning, they left it at home. To which their four-year-old daughter said, "But Dad, how will we know where we're going?" Something to keep in mind as we start. Verse 11 of Romans chapter 10. As Scripture says, anyone who believes in Him will never be put out, will never be put to shame. I'm going to recount a story of another trip that I took to Northeast India. This is not far from the Burma border, not far from Bhutan, up in the very top corner of India. The morning was surprisingly cool, and I woke early, as is my habit. Dressing quickly in the darkness, I crept slowly out of the planked home, sporting a corrugated roof like most others in the village. The twilight of the early morning was filled with the chattering of awaking birds, and I wondered if I might awaken one or more of the village's slumbering dogs as I made my way to the dirt road, now moistened with dew. I was on my way to have another look at the village school and reflected on the previous day. The 180-kilometer journey over narrow, deeply rutted roads had taken 8 hours by 4x4. Our two vehicles had carried an assortment of men, one, an ex-government minister who had been born in this remote village. We also had two uniformed soldiers who openly held rifles. I was told, "There are guerrillas in the hills," to which I simply nodded, assessing the full import. Hot and tired from the journey, I was suddenly refreshed when we finally entered the village and were greeted by at least 60 or more school children and many parents along the village road. The children in front were each holding a sheet of paper which spelled W-E-L-L-C-O-M-E. Welcome. All of a sudden, the village was abuzz with activity. Their guest had arrived. As with many other parts of the world, we were made to feel very welcome, and we were quickly ushered into the headman's home for tea and biscuits. After a splash of water, we were then taken to the village school and proudly shown the building at the edge of a rough playground. The children, by now, were sitting at their desks, waiting for their photo opportunity. And the headmaster proudly answered our questions and reported of the children's progress. In this remote, hilly part of Northeast India, they were using an ACE, an Accelerated Christian Education curriculum. The day was drawing to a close, and it was becoming harder to see in the school since there was no electricity. We gathered outside for a photo session. Isn't that part of the Great Commission? After which we headed back to the village. It was only on the way back to the village that we heard that the children had not eaten since breakfast. They had been too excited and had been waiting for us all afternoon in the hot sun, and now, finally, they could go home, though their excitement was still running very high. Tomorrow would give them another look at their guests, one of whom was from Canada. The shroud of darkness brought with it a stillness as thick as the night. Misty clouds gathered in the valleys, and they could not hide God's handiwork splashed across the heavens. Serenaded by crickets, our meal was simple, yet magnificent, prepared by unknown hands, as is often the case. The cooks and helpers remain hidden for most of the meal. We chatted about various projects and the headman's vision for building for the village, including microhydro, the village school, some organized sports, a music program, a more determined animal husbandry effort, and, of course, better cultivation for crops, including their citrus and teak plantations. The word gorilla was used, almost whispered. In the charged setting, the cautionary tone implied that gorillas might actually be in the village, and one, meaning the foreigner, should not take any unnecessary chances, since nothing is private in a small, remote village. A soldier accompanied me to my evening toilet, and I made sure I was safely inside the headman's home again. We returned to our bedrooms and tucked ourselves under a mosquito netting and a quilt, and soon drifted off to sleep with the day's adventure and tomorrow's possibilities turning in my head. With the village school as my morning goal, I was lost in my own thoughts. I was out on my early morning walk when suddenly, out of the mist, someone approached. I kept walking, and when, within speaking distance, I only nodded at the man. It was then I saw his hand resting on an AK-47 slung around his shoulder. Point two, examining a foreign faith. Verse 12 of Romans 10 says, "For there is no difference between Jew and Gentile. The same Lord is Lord of all and richly blesses all who call on him." This is from the Middle East. She slaps dough against a plastic bowl and dust settles upon the African horn. As she squats upon a concrete floor, she joins sister, aunt, mother, and neighbor in the evening chorus of hands kneading flour and water, preparing tomorrow's bread. Though this day is done, she's planning for another. Flies whirl above her head, eavesdropping on her thoughts. At dawn's first light, she'll shuffle calloused feet across cold floor, pick up a rug, and bend weary knees eastward. She'll utter memorized prayers. Then, with her heart wrenching, she's whispered for years, "Please, just once, the feel of a swelling belly, the touch of a tiny hand, the smell of a dimpled skin, sounds of little feet pounding on concrete." Every day she'll continue to ask, beg, plead. She'll ward off the jinn and the dark question that lurks in the cobwebs of her mind. What if her husband leaves for a fruitful womb? The corners of her mouth curl into a frown. She punches the dough down. Flies scatter as she cries, "No." Tomorrow she'll prove herself worthy once again. She'll work hard at cleaning the foreigner's house, leaving sparkling floors, shiny pots, fresh laundry. Her husband will expect to see the fruit of her hard labor, and she'll find more ways to make money. She'll take vegetables to the market before the other ladies and won't come home until she sells every last one. When her husband comes home from the market with a downcast face from lack of work and the smell of cut heavy on his breath, she'll make his mouth water with the smell of crushed garlic and cumin. They'll gather around a bowl filled with pasto, and she'll watch with delight as he shovels fingers into his mouth. When he grunts with satisfaction, she'll blush deep. All the other ladies know that she's the best cook on the street. She'll continue to fill his stomach to evade her empty womb. Then, after resting from the heat of the afternoon sun, she'll visit her neighbors and catch up on the latest gossip. She'll find out about the unmarried women and emulate their beauty, their decorated hands and feet. With women she trusts, she'll dance away her fears to lively music and jingling bells. The slapping stops. The night is still. She swallows hard as her empty womb taunts. It's been 3 years of praying and tongues wagging. 3 long years of questioning stares at all baby celebrations. The spiders are back, spinning webs in her mind. Is her labor enough? Is she enough? She covers the dome, swatting away flies that sniff her shame. Tomorrow's a new day, and she hopes that this bread will satisfy both her and her husband in the morning. Section 3. Mission and a personal faith. Romans 10, verse 13. For everyone who calls in the name of the Lord will be saved. This is from a Daily Bread reading from 2007. Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus. Sorry, this is a reading from Luke chapter 24, verses 13 to 32. About 7 miles from Jerusalem, they were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them. But they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" And they stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it is the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early in the morning, but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the woman had said. But they did not see Jesus. He said to them, 'How foolish you are, and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory? And, beginning with the prophets and Moses, and he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself.' As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus continued on, as if he were going further. And they urged him strongly, 'Stay with us, for it is nearly evening. The day is almost over.' So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, 'Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us?'" In Acts 17, Paul went to Mars Hill to declare the truth of the resurrection. Many gathered there were not spiritual seekers. Luke, who wrote the book of Acts, recorded that they spent their days simply wanting to discuss the latest new ideas, with little interest in acting on what they had learned. Too much information can be dangerous. All the ideas can blur together and become incoherent, leaving us unchanged by what we know. Centuries ago, the historian Plutarch warned of the danger of living on a purely informational level. He wisely said, "The mind is not a vessel to be filled, but a fire to be kindled." The Christ followers on the road to Emmaus would have agreed. As they grieved the death of Jesus, the risen Jesus Christ himself joined them but hid his identity. he began instructing them on the ancient prophecies of those events found throughout the Old Testament. Later that day, Christ revealed himself to them and then departed. After Jesus' departure, they marveled at what they had heard. The things he taught were not sterile facts about a fire that kindled in their hearts with devotion for him. May we likewise trust the shepherd of our souls to kindle our hearts as we grow in his word. As we walk along the road of life, we can sense that Jesus is there too. As we read his word and hear his voice, we will find he kindles fire anew. The thought is, you cannot start a fire in another's heart till it is burning in your own. Please excuse my rambling. I've given you three different sections, two stories, and a concept. I'm going to leave you with some questions. What role do we individually have in mission today? That role as it is involved in from our human perspective. The reason I bring this up is with our gadgets, our doodads, our devices, we can easily become disconnected from others, pun intended, where we start to realize that perhaps we are not interacting with people on a personal level. Where is our human perspective? Do we continue to develop relationship with others? Are we willing to take the time to spend time, even as Jesus did with the Samaritan woman at the well? Are we willing to serve one another, serve another person, someone who is unworthy, and serve till it hurts? I have to ask that question of myself on a daily basis, and I'm quite surprised with that answer. Am I willing to begin my journey of mission at home? For many years, I had been under the impression that somehow water was a great separator between us and them, that mission was something done over there. But in reality, mission begins at home. A second thought. In an age of technology, it is important for us to connect with others in distant lands. We are no longer limited to language, culture, food, or ethnicity. Mission is all around us. In our daily going forth and going out, coming in, we are very fortunate to live in Vancouver, where we are surrounded by the world. I couldn't think of a better place to live. As I had mentioned before, I'm surrounded with people who have a great deal of experience, a great deal of wisdom. What skills could you employ to do the outworking of mission all around you? Mission is defined by a goal. What's yours? Is mission still relevant? What is your heart telling you?